my mind up one year. I said, I'm either going to become a cloud engineer this year or I'm going to die. That was literally my mentality, and I meant every word. I said, I'm going to die or I'm going to become a cloud engineer. So I literally stopped partying. I stopped going out. I still got the text to this day of my friends telling, nah, I can't go out with you. I'm studying. Nah, I can't do this. I'm studying. I did boot camps, courses. I did everything you could think of. I ended up getting my AWS Certified Practitioner Cert. First off, keep in mind, now I failed this certification as well twice. Now, I don't fail three times, all right? I'm paying out of pocket. I ain't getting reimbursed or sponsored, no vouchers, nobody. I said, man, so I finally, my homegirl, she picked me up one night because the night before I was supposed to take my exam, my car broke down. And my homegirl gave me a ride to the 30 minutes away to take my exam. Took my exam, hey, oh man, I was elated. I was elated.
This video is being brought to you by Level Up in Tech. It's Q3 in 2024, but you still have time to get into the cloud. With the quick search for cloud in Indeed, you can see over 44,000 jobs are listed that is related or pertaining to the cloud. Now, that is a lot, but if you're watching this right now, you might be thinking, well, how do I learn the skills to get into the cloud? Well, we got you covered. Level Up in Tech is one of the best, if not the best, program related to getting people into the cloud. At Level Up in Tech, you can learn about server config and troubleshooting, the AWS cloud, infrastructure as code, CI/CD, scripting, containerization, and more. And also, they now also have a new multi-cloud AI engineering program that is dedicated to help you have the latest and greatest skills to help you be marketable in this tech market. They post more testimonials than almost any program that I could think of. Check them out. Now, if you're ready to start your cloud career today, then use the link in my description to go to levelupintech.com/tech so you can start your career. And plus, they'll know that I sent you. But on to the video. Welcome back to the Textual Talk Podcast. I'm your host, HD, and we got a special guest for y'all today. None other than D'Amico Chambers, a.k.a. Cloud Tech Big Unk. He in the building with us today. But before we get into the episode, y'all know what to do. If you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe, hit the like button, and hit that bell icon to be notified when we're dropping our content. And if you're listening to us on any of the streaming platforms, leave us a comment, follow us, helps us out in those podcast analytics. And also, subscribe to the Patreon, you know what I'm saying? Because we need to do a part two of this in person, you know what I'm saying, with some cigars and some drink. But what's going on, man?
My language, man. Talking my language. Cigar daddy, you know, cigar aficionado, you know, nice little something to sip on. That's the best way to communicate about tech, man. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's funny though. I haven't really gotten to cigars yet. Like, that's something I do want to get into. I feel like that's the next level, like grown status, cigars.
Man, you know what's funny? You say boss level, man. I remember I started getting into cigars around, I think I was like 25, 26. I had lost everything, and I used to do Uber. And I was sleeping on my mom's couch at the time, and I needed somewhere to go and something to do. This wasn't even the Uber. I was doing the worst job I ever had, bouncy houses. And in between installing bouncy houses, in between installs, I needed something to do because I didn't want to have to drive back home and be on the couch all day. So I just needed something to buy time until it was time to pick up the bouncy houses. So I said, man, let me stop by the cigar shop and see what's cracking, man. I went in there, man, and I was hooked ever since, man. I've been there for like 4 hours, 6 hours in between installs and, you know, be able to in a relaxed atmosphere, vibing, you know, chopping it up with folks. And, you know, before I knew it, man, it just turned into a lifestyle, something I will always just do in the evenings, you know, mostly on weekends. And ever since then, it's kind of, I just ingratiated myself more so into the culture, cigar culture. And it just became a lifestyle for me. So that's a part of my identity, apparently.
That's fire. I know it's a nice spot. It's not right by me. It's probably like 15, 20 minutes away. I've been in there before. I think I smoked some cigars in there before, like with some friends. Used to be a spot we would go to like late night for a good like grown vibe. Went a lot of kids in there. So it was always cool. It's a one of those bring your own liquor spots. So you can bring your own liquor.
BYOB. Yeah. Those are kind of cool spots. Yeah, you found some cuts. Good spots like that. You know, the music's not loud or crazy. It's not a club atmosphere. It's kind of just a lot of grown folks around with real responsibilities that just come and, you know, kick back and shoot the breeze, you know.
Right. And for my women watchers, listen, that's where you go find the sugar daddies at.
Hey, you hear me? You know, you might get your teeth in something, you know, something nice.
That's what they
might get you
at.
A Range Rover.
I'm good. Nah, they know because that's all the time they be trying to figure out where they at. That's where they at though.
That my women friends that all the time. Now listen, there's a lot of married men. I say that now. So he's college and pros, but for the men that ain't married, you know, when I was in there as a bachelor, there's a lot of bachelors in there, and it's a great come up for just men who just serious about their careers, but just want to kick back in a laid back atmosphere. Don't want to party too much. Don't want to be in a mix too much. Just want to have a casual conversation, really kind of get to know somebody. So, you know, especially potential suitor. So yeah, it's definitely a place for a grown woman to meet some grown men. You know, you never know where those connections can go. It doesn't always have to be romantic. It end up being a professional, you know, connection that you make as well. So yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And while you were talking, that reminded me of one of my previous guests, Tiffany. She was talking about how she got into cybersecurity. And I think at the time she was either working or doing something around a cigar bar. And they was putting her on Game by Cyber. And that's how she ended up getting cybersecurity. So,
oh, that's crazy.
You got to go crazy. Like wherever the people, like the late Godfather used to say, man, wherever people you want to be like, you need to know where they be at.
Absolutely, man. Just real quick, it's funny you said about Tiff because a part of my mission when I started Be Cloud Engineers came from a conversation with an OG. Mike, Calvin, that's his name, OG Calvin, used to be at the cigar bar. This dude was the first Shannon Sharp that I met in person. Like, this dude was like 50-something, gray hair, you know, the pepper gray hair, great shape, fit, you know, this swaggy, cool, older gentleman. He was a tech consultant. And I remember one night he just broke down into tears telling me, he said, man, the biggest regret I got is that I didn't take nobody with me to my climb towards success, nobody from his hometown in Alabama. He said, young bucks, no matter what you do, be sure that you bring somebody up with you. You know, so ever since we had that conversation that day, man, I said, you know what? Wherever I go in this tech journey, man, I'm going to be sure to be a liaison to help as many people as I can, like me, from my community, friends or, you know, acquaintances or whoever, you know, come to the mountaintop with me and, you know, prosper in this tech industry. I didn't know it was going to be cloud tech at the time, but it just so happened to pan out that way. But ever since he had that heart to heart with me, man, I was like, yeah, I don't want to become that older man who's very successful. Cause he was like, I got all this property. I got all these houses. I got da-da-da-da. But nobody to look back and share it with. Like, dang, we went through the cave together. We went through the dungeons together. And I was like, yeah, I don't want that to be my story. I want a part of my success to be shared among other people's successes as well that I helped along the way. So that is funny she said that because that's one of the most polarizing messages that I've decided to carry with me ever since that day. So
cool. With that being said, let's talk about your story real quick, man. So let's go ahead and introduce yourself. You know, take as much time as you want to. We on this podcast, we let our guests talk. We let them get whatever they want to get off that they can't see on other platforms. This is what we do around here.
All right, that's cool. I can be a little loquacious. No drink needed for that. But I'm gonna try to keep it brief as I possibly can. But so you know, my story is, I'm born in the '80s. You know, come from single parent household. You know, grew up in complete poverty. You know, I had aspirations as a teenager. I tell you no lie, aspirations by the age of 16. I said, man, I know what I want to be as an adult. I want to be a swaggy dude in the hood with an old school, being able to walk around in house slippers, fly house slippers, like some pink fur house slippers or something like that, with a hope just making visits to different girls' houses that I mess with. I was like, that's what I wanted to be. So, but that, you know, speaks to just the type of environment I grew up in. And I remember my fifth grade teacher telling us, like, he's like, I went to Cleveland Avenue on the south side in Atlanta. He was like, he told us, he said, you know, you all are expected by the age of 16 to 18 to have already been to jail, beyond the age of 18, you're supposed to be already locked up with a few baby mamas, and then you're not supposed to make it past 25. You're supposed to be dead by 25. And that really stuck with me. And so, you know, I've always kind of been my own rebel without a cause, you know, my own standing on my own, trying to go my own route. And so I went to alternative high school. I dropped out of high school. I ended up getting my GED about a year later. I enrolled into a trade school, a tech trade school. I got my diploma. I got my first tech internship. Now, you know what I'm saying? It like it was a walk in the park. It was nothing laid out. Like I had to go figure all this out on my own. My mom didn't know nothing about FAFSA form or nothing. I had tried to get the fake high school diploma from Cornerstone and had to end up still having to take the GED because they nobody, no school would take the fake diploma. I was trying to figure out what I was wanting to do in life. And so by the time I got the diploma, I had got the internship. I was there for like, and this is an internship. I just went on Craigslist and just started applying for, you know, I made this whole email pitch to a whole bunch of companies saying I want to be an intern. You know, I work for free. And I found a company nearby, mid-sized, that allowed me to come in 3 days a week to work for free for a couple hours. And so it came down to it where they had to make a decision to keep me or kick me out. And I was doing really well. And then they said, you know what, if you pass this test to get this computer to boot up, and this is old school, it's a desktop PC. They said, if you can get it to boot up, we're going to give you a job with us. We're going to pay you as a, you know, put you on our salary. I said, oh man, cool. Man, it took me about an hour and a half. I couldn't get that thing to boot up for the And I had did all this help desk support experience and everything, but it wasn't sticking for me. I wasn't getting it, you know, it just didn't work out. So it was like, yeah, we got to let you go. So that was my first time being laid off. And I think I was like 18 or so, 18 and 19. So anyway, I had ended up getting the first corporate job at 20. And I was working as a project coordinator, started off data entry. And then worked my way up all the way up to a level 2 project coordinator right under a project manager for a telecom project management firm who basically built cell phone towers for AT&T. And so I went from that allowed me to move on my mom's house, get an apartment, which eventually allowed me to buy my own first house by the age of 24. And, you know, I was self-sustainable. I was making a really good salary, had my own everything. And, you know, there was, you know, and was doing well in life, you know, especially coming from where I come from. And so I was like, man, so what's next for me? So I remember one day I went to the office, corporate office, and they said, all right, we're going to give you a raise. I said, oh, crap, you know, I'm already making good money. At that time, I think it's 2012, 2014, I was making like $26 an hour. And it was like, all right, we're going to give you a raise. I said, oh, man, I'm about to make stupid bang. Now I'm about to, you know, I'm about to really be the man, you know, in my social circle, you know. So, man, they said, all right, so here's a breakdown of how much you make, you're going to make, and how much is going to be divvied after the year. My manager was so proud at the time. He was a really good manager, too. He said, so proud to give me this raise. Man, that raise was 10 cents, man. I said, nah. I said, ain't no way. This can't be the corporate ladder I was supposed to be trying to climb. I said, nah, man. Man, so after I left the office, I said, nah, I got to figure out something else. This ain't going to work. So I ended up quitting. Actually got fired, technically, because I said, I'm going to show up late every day. They're either going to fire me or I'm going to have the balls to quit. And I showed up late every day for like 3 months before they fired. And I decided to do full-on life coaching. And so that's when I got into life coaching and mentorship. I did a whole bunch of amazing stuff as 100% entrepreneur. I drunk the Kool-Aid, the turn Tony Robbins, burn the boats, Kool-Aid, you know. And so I figured, you know, was doing that for like years, man. And, you know, had a lot of highs, had a lows, and ended up losing everything, you know, just due to four financial decision making. I wasn't financially savvy or disciplined or educated. So I would just blow money, like blow money. And so I blew all the money and mismanaged my house and everything. Ended up getting into foreclosure and everything. Lost a house, lost everything but my car. And I moved back in. I was dating the girl at the time, said I was going to find a roommate. She said, you should move back here with your parents. With your mama. So I said, man, you know what kind of conditions my mom living in? This? Man, I don't know, your parents got a nice big house. Y'all in the burbs out here in Duluth. You know, I got to go back to the hood on the 6, you know, and my bedroom's going to be on the couch. And there's about 5 of us sharing an apartment bathroom, one bathroom. So anyway, so I did that, man. Things were just looking bad, man. I had got fired from, I was actually a bouncer. I was a bouncer for about a year. I did all type of odd jobs, construction work, all type of stuff. Anyway, ended up doing Uber, and Lyft, and got fired from both of them. So, listen, this fire thing that people talk about layoffs, I'm like, listen, I've been dealing with this since my early 20s. So it's like, it's nothing to me to always, you know, understand that you got to have a plan after when they let you go. So anyway, I remember one day before I got kicked off of Uber, that I met this one brother who was trying to talk to me in the morning, just talk my ears. And I was one of those Uber drivers. I don't want to have a conversation with you. I just want to take you to your destination, drop you off. You know, you say our farewells. It is what it is. You know, get my money. And he was just persistent talking my ear off. He was from New York. He's with all that bravado. He was telling me about tech. Da, da, da. And he mentioned something about the cloud. And I was like, what's the cloud? He's like, oh, Amazon Web Services. They have a cloud now. I was like, Amazon. I was like, the book company? This is where Amazon, the most tech thing I know about them was the Kindle. Yeah. I was like, she was like, yeah, you can certify and get your plan solutions architect certification in the half for like, it's like 84 ranks. I said, $84,000? And he's like, yeah. He's like, oh, you got to do a good certification. I said, for real? So long story short, I bartered with him because I didn't have the money to pay for at the time. Linux Academy was the only ones producing cloud training content at this time. The only one. And I said, it was like $30 a month. I couldn't afford it. I was bro. And I was like, you know what? I'll come pick you up and take you wherever you want to go every day for, 5 days a week for a month in exchange for your membership. Because he had a membership with Linux Academy through his job. He worked in the data center. And he was like, sure. Man, I did not know that this dude was a strip club veteran. And so literally 4 nights a week, I'm taking him to the strip club. This is how I've gotten to the strip clubs. I used to take him to the strip club like 4 nights a week, like no joke, in the city. And I just finesse it sometimes because it got to the point where he'll pay me 20 for the ride and then he'll give me 20 to tip the dancers. But sometimes I'm going to kick the 20 and not tip the dancers, you know? And so, you know, so I just sometimes walk away with a 40 piece some night. So anyway, use his account, studied my butt off, failed. My first exam, the cloud service, AWS Cloud Solutions Architect exam. Then, I eventually got a tech job with a help desk job with Dell working for the state of Georgia installing desktops. I was only supposed to be, and I treated it like I did my project management job. Like I was only supposed to be there for about a month, and I ended up busting my butt. They ended up having me there for, I ended up being there long term for about a year and some change. Well, while I'm there, I'm still on contract. They can let me go at any time. I'm not making really much of nothing, but I got enough now to where I can move out of my mom's and move there with roommates. And so I moved in with like four guys into this house, whatever. My bed is still on like crates. Like my bed was literally sleeping on crates. And so, they had all these cats. It was crazy. Anyway, I said, man, you know what? I'm either going to become a cloud engineer. Because I was at my wit's end with everything. I was at my wit's end with not knowing what to do with this cloud stuff. Because my buddy, I knew nobody that knew how to get in the cloud. Like I had these conversations with people, but nobody knew how to do it. Nobody knew what a cloud engineer was. I was in this one cloud engineer group on Facebook, but it was all Indian based. And most of them were trying to sell you some type of product or some type of hack or something like that. And so I was like, I said, you know what? This is going to be my year. I literally sat on my bed and said, I'm either going to become a cloud engineer this year or I'm going to die. That was literally my mentality. And I meant every word. I said, I'm going to die or I'm going to become a cloud engineer. I don't even really know how I'm going to do it, but I'm going to kind of figure it out. So I literally stopped partying. I stopped going out. I still got the text to this day of my friends telling me, nah, I can't go out with you. I'm studying. Nah, I can't do this. I'm studying. I did boot camps, courses. I did everything you could think of. And, I ended up getting my AWS certified practitioner cert. First off, keep in mind, now I failed this certification as well twice. Now I don't fail three times. I'm paying out of pocket. I ain't getting reimbursed or sponsored, no vouchers, nobody. And so I said, man, so I finally, my homegirl, she picked me up one night because the night before I was supposed to take my exam, my car broke down. And my homegirl gave me a ride to the 30 minutes away to take my exam. Took my exam, passed. Oh man, I was elated. My mom picked me up and took me back to my roommate's house where I stand at. And I kid you not, man, I had been applying for tech roles way before I got my certification. I also did some volunteer work of helping a friend of mine who owned a major blog site at the time, help her. She had her blog site hosted on AWS. And I had volunteered to help her do some disaster recovery methods for her website, as well as help restore her website that went down. And so, I was figuring it out along the way as well. So, but I did enough. I knew enough to be able to restore everything and set up DR for her, et cetera. So anyway, and I say all that to say, in combination with helping her, because I added her business to my resume, and, you know, as a cloud architect, because I am, you know, I'm the only cloud person, as you know, I'm the one that architect the whole restore, et cetera. And then I added my certification. Man, I applied for this one job. I got wind of that they were hiring for cloud support engineers. I applied. They gave me a call that same day. They interviewed me. I applied the night before. They called me the next morning. They set up the interviews. I kid you not, I had 4 interviews in the next 2 days. So that same day I had 2 interviews, and then the following day I had 2 more interviews. I went up through all these rounds of interviews, and I ended up getting the job. They gave me the job. They gave me the job offer. And so I was excited. I remember the whole time I'm telling my boys and a lot of the guys I work with, like, y'all need to get into this cloud. Y'all need to get into this cloud. Nobody's believing me. And until I went and showed them the offer letter that I got the job. And so the job, I was in Atlanta at the time, and the job was based out of Durham, North Carolina. So they say, all right, we need you to be up here in a couple weeks. And I said, cool, I'll be there. And I was working, my job was to work cloud support graveyard shift. All right. Graveyard shift. And I in office. This is before even working remote was a thing. So I said, cool, I'm gonna be there. I don't know how I'm gonna get there, but I'm gonna be there. I loaded that car up so fast, cleaned out everything, let my roommates know, kissed my mom and sisters goodbye. And I hit the road, man. And I found the roommate out there, one of the most, you know, that commercial, what's that? The Saki's commercial, the most interesting guy in the world. I swear the roommate that I met out there is the most interesting guy in the world. This guy can act. He works in tech, like fixing ATMs. He's worked on his house. He knows how he's great with animals. He had a parrot, he had all these super animals. He could just do everything. The dude was he would sing and play the guitar in the house. This dude was amazing. He was a great looking guy. He was just amazing, bro. I was like, y'all, I'm not being man enough in my life. And so anyway, worked that job, man. That's basically how I got my start in cloud. That was my first role. I think that was like 2018. And everything kind of took off from there, man.
All right, guys, we're done.
Got it. All right, is there something to say?
Nah, man, you touched on a lot. And before we get more into like you know, you started your cloud career about, 6 years ago, I believe. I want to touch on upbringing slightly because, man, you know, granted, we may have had like slightly different upbringings, but we still know people. Like I know people who grew up similar to how you did. But you said the things that you saw on the regular of, hey man, I want to what's that car called? People talk about. I want an old school Chevelle or something. And I want to be on the scene. You know what I'm saying? That's all I want to do. I want to work at the corner store, and everybody know me. And you know what I'm saying? So. A lot of the, like I did this blog post a while back, and I may just need to reshare to revamp it. But I was saying like one of the number one things, and this can go for cyber, go for cloud, this can go for databases, go for anything that's in tech related. The number one thing keeping a lot of Black people out of it is exposure.
Absolutely.
It's like most of the time, and then we can get like deep on this combo too. It's like, one of the reasons why, like, you'll see, like, maybe Black kids don't want to go to school is they see people that went to college and they struggling just like their parents who didn't go.
Yes. A social worker struggling. you know, police officer struggling.
Yeah.
You might teach. Know some lawyers, but the lawyers are like old and they're crippled and they're not cool looking. And then you're like, lawyers, I got to go to school for 8 years. I'm doing all that.
Yeah.
I barely like doing homework, you know? So yeah, the collegiate way seems so unappealing. And then the success story seems so far fetched, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying you're on point with it. And that's one of the things too, is like what people talk about, like different educations, like, unless you're in a certain area where you see these people, like they're like, for example, you in the Atlanta area. So they got spots where it's nothing but successful Black people that you're going to see that do all different type of careers. If you ain't growing up around some of that stuff, you'll never know. And it can be in the same city as you, because I'm from Shreveport. So
Louisiana,
different hoods in the area where like one spot, like Cooper Road, where it's kind of like far off from everything. They got people like when right before I moved to Dallas in 2014, I briefly had a stint as like a counselor, like one of my friends on one of those mental health joints. And all you needed was a degree to go like talk to these kids and stuff like that. And some of the training, there's something, hey, I know it's some kids that's like never went over the bridge to Bossier. They've only been on the Cooper Road.
Mm.
So like, it's just so many people who have never left they block. They don't know. All they know is put they invisible box they put themselves in.
You think, and I think that's a big misconception that happens with Atlanta. And what spoils you about growing up in the city is that, you know, yeah, where is Black everything surrounded by us and everywhere. You know, the thing we do run into though, where it's like, though we live in the city, we might be so far out removed from where the Black professionals are congregated. So like you live on the south side, any side of town, you know, the real action of where all the white collar professional Blacks are, the business owners are kind of centralized inside the loop of 285, inside the city. You know, they're in Midtown, they're in Buckhead. You know, we kids living in, you know, and out there in Marietta, or living out there in, on the east side, Lithonia, living on the south side, you know, even far north side, Gwinnett. You know, we're not really that attached to what's happening in on the inside of the city. And so we used to, you know, where I lived in Roswell, you know, is a traditionally a wealthy community, you know, a white wealthy community coming from white slave owners and plantations and a lot of farmers, farming families out there. And even we lived in a poor pocket, literally the pocket we lived on off Exit 6. It's literally, when you look at a map, an old map from Roswell from the 1800s, is literally the same place where the slave quarters were. In fact, it's just the church that we all used to congregate at was the same, is a church that was ran by slaves. You know, slaves ran that church and that family eventually took over the church. And of course, built a name for themselves as well and you know, got them their family out of poverty. But like we were still poor and like, distant from any access of opportunities. One of the great things that happened is that, and I don't know if you all had this in your state or city, but the jobs program helped us a lot because it brought those outer city kids to the inner city to be around Black collar professionals, white collar professionals, people who had degrees, like people that went to Morehouse, Spelman. Like we never really met these people in person. We heard about it, seen about it, but we never got to have a conversation with it. You know, that was our first times wearing collared shirts and slacks and stuff. And they gave us job opportunities, something to do instead of running around on the side all day. You know, we learned about doing timesheets and coordination and interviews and resumes. Like, so those job programs help a lot with exposure, you know, so it definitely needs to be a tremendous effort in supporting job programs for the youth and just all type of activities that do what you said earlier. Provide exposure. And that's why I did so much mentoring, still do a lot of mentoring. I don't do as much today, but up until recently, I've done so much mentoring is because, you know, our youth need exposure to the opportunities beyond what they see on TV or social media or here in their neighborhoods. You know, they need to know what's real and what's possible for them without it being an expensive dream or a far-fetched dream, you know, so.
Nah, you on it. I think we had something similar to that. I know, like, I have a cousin. We the same age, and her mom used to put her in all those things like biz camp and all those things in the summer where they would do some of the stuff that you're talking about. But I want to get back into some of the corporate talk, because what else was funny to me was when you said, oh yeah, I'm going to get you a raise, and it was 10 cent. It reminded me of my first job. I was a contractor for the TSA help desk. And at that time I was making 17 an hour. And so of course we signed some of our things. So, okay, when we bring you over, you know, you're going to convert over, but it didn't say how much you would make. I think initially they told everybody it was going to be, we'll convert over like 30 an hour or whatever, which turned out to be a lot.
That was good money back then. Yeah.
Well, they reneged on the contracts on everybody. So we didn't know that the companies did their negotiations without letting us know. So that's why everybody was down. But when it came to convert back in, it was like late 2014. You know, no fools tried to offer me 70 cent more.
70 cents?
I was like, listen, I got my degree. I got this certification right here. You got to at least pay me 40 G's. Because at that time, you know what I'm saying, I didn't know what I could get. I didn't really know how to negotiate. But yeah, they did the cheapest way possible to give me 40 G's. They paid me $19 and some cent that would equal out to 40K. I was like, boy, I tell you.
Man, I'm telling you, audacity. And then the sad part is, like, especially, I don't know how it was in your position, but when I was working those projects, I'm seeing how much money we're paying out to vendors versus the margin, the percentage that we're keeping for ourselves. And we're talking about high seven figures, you know? And so I'm like, ain't no way y'all about to give me, I'm handling all this money in front of me, just passing it on. And y'all gonna tell me I only get 10 cents, a 10 cent increase in pay? Like, nah, man, this don't make no sense. Nah, absolutely not.
Definitely a slap in the face. I'm like,
yeah, man, absolutely not. No way.
But you know, the reason why they do that is because I know, like, my mom and them age back in the day, people was getting, you know, quarter raises, 50 cent raises, and they was happy. So a lot of times you was a person that wasn't happy with that, but everybody else was like, it's like one of them, I hate to say it, like one of them slave mentality things, just thankful that somebody, they thankful they got a job and somebody gave them something.
Right.
Know what you know.
Yeah. And we always have to keep in context. Different times for different folks, you know, like,
right,
you know, they had to take those jobs because it was either that or what, you know, that there were the barter entry for entrepreneurship or for other alternative means of earning was a lot more steeper and a lot more enriched and entrenched and discriminatory legal practices. So, you know, our parents had and grandparents had to, you know, but
yeah, I'm not really focusing on them as much as I'm talking about, like, there used to be people I work with. Like,
oh, yeah.
I'm like, I used to try to listen. People don't believe me. And one day I'm going to have my homie, he stay out here and we're going to do a show. I'm like, do you remember when I used to say, hey, man, they ain't paying us right. All we got to do is not answer calls for like 3 minutes and they have to give us our money. Because our job, you had to have a clearance to do it.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like they just get everybody on there.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to ride with me on the strike, man. Because I was trying to help them get paid. See, I knew I eventually wasn't going to be there.
That's the thing about the change maker, man. You got to understand, and you learn early. And that's one of the things that you learn early is that when you have a vision, man, everybody ain't going to see it, you know, even those that you care deeply about to try to bring along the way, everybody just, and you got to make peace with that eventually. And a lot of folks also know if you're not from the South, y'all don't understand how it's not backward thinking, just traditional thinking. A lot of our folks are, because that's just and you from Shreveport, which is even more rural than parts of them for. So it's like, I don't understand how behind just a lot of the thinking of our people, how they are, you know, because they just lack exposure. They ain't never seen this kind of stuff before. They never seen innovative people come in before. They never seen a strike really work before. They never seen those type of things. So to them, it's like you're speaking foreign language. You want them to take a chance on something that you don't even know is going to work, and you in the same position they in. They like, nah.
Yeah, man. But outside of that, man, I just want to commend you on really you pretty much did what you had to do to get into the industry. And that's something where we see most people with that mindset, they will be successful. It's not an if, it's a win. It's always a win. Just like I think I was on the introductory call to one of my clients, and I told him straight up, I was like, yo, my clients that bug me and talk to me all the time, they the most successful clients. Mm-hmm. The ones that I'm having to keep on checking on and like, oh, what you doing? I ain't heard from you. them the ones that they're not as successful as the ones that's talking to me every day. Like, they'll text me, yo, hey, look at this. Hey, I sent this. What should I do about this? Them the ones that's trying to get it. Mm-hmm. So with you, it's like, listen, by any means, you said you made a decree. Look, hey, I'm going to either get in or die trying. Like, no 50 cent. And you got in. Yeah. You manifested that.
Yeah, yeah. And it was a lot of hard work. And as I explained to everyone, it's like, it's a very lonely path being ambitious, you know, and especially being highly ambitious. Like, you're going to have nights and moments where you're going to be alone, and you have to make peace with that. And I try to prepare my students to always understand that though you got coaching or mentoring, or you have a teacher or professor, whoever helped you along the way with your training, this is still a self-taught industry, even when you get your first opportunity, because how you train to become a cloud engineer, tech professional, will be how you perform as a tech professional or cloud engineer. You know, your study habits, your ability to take initiative, the ability to deal with rejection when things don't go your way or don't work, how you recover from loss when you get laid off or you lose your job or the contract get lost or what have you. Those things that you train yourself for, that's the social ambition piece that you're going to need to be successful in this field and just any field in life. Like, you got to develop that drive to be able to just go at it alone, regardless of who's with you or who's, you know, against you. So.
Yeah. And before we leave off the topic, not only that, you got all the naysayers around you. Ah, he didn't fail 3-4 times. I don't even know why. He needs to just go ahead and what they say on social media, he need to put the fries in the bag. That's what he needs
put
to do.
Put the fries in the bag. Yeah, this is one of my favorite, funniest comments I'll be seeing on Twitter when somebody right. says something crazy. They were like, yo, put the fries in the bag.
Like, yeah, go ahead. They be saying that, or like, I was watching whatever, someone with Carmelo, some of my people talking about he needs to go get his CDL. Like, you know, people saying all these different things about you failing because they can't see the vision. They don't see what you see.
Man, and so and that's
success
the,
is lonely.
That's the crazy part, man. And it's like, man, that's the gift and the curse of this, man. Like, you achieve so much, man. But you know what came with that and what comes with that. Because even as you become successful, and you reach the top, you still going to have naysayers, you know, people who are going to be like, oh, you know, they're going to think it's a scam, or they're going to think you bluffing, or you wolfing. You really ain't got no GED. You know, you really didn't just train yourself up, or it's always going to be there, man. It's just like, you have to, at that point, you got to focus on the people who need your message and who want your message, you know, mm-hmm. who want your help and need your aid. Those are the ones that's going to make a difference, because it's not just going to be you alone. It's going to be who you can help that wants to help along the way, and because they're going to do the same thing for people that follow them, who wants to help. And before you know it, you were just one. Then you doubled your effort to 10 people. And those 10 people became 100 people, and those 100 people, you know, it spread. It's like wildfire. So, you know, at the end of the day, to where, you know, the results are undeniable, you know. So it's like, you know, every great person went through it. Every great entrepreneur, or not even just outside of business, every this great professional period in their industry, titan in their industry, went through it. You know, you're not going to be an exception to that rule. So.
Yeah, that's facts. All right. So now we're going to get on that first job. You drove probably all the way from Atlanta. This is probably what, an 8 to 10 hour drive?
Yeah, 8 to 10 hours. Yeah, 8 to 10 hours. I had a Nissan Altima. It had 331,000 miles on it. And it used to get hot along the way. So I used to have a jug of water to pour in the coolant mm-hmm. to keep it cool, you know, from overheating along the way. But yeah, I said, hey man, crook or hook, I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, man. But that's what it take though. It take that.
You got to be able to see an opportunity beyond what the immediate payout is, you know, and the money was good money at the time, you know? And I'm not the type of, you know, person that likes to get in dollars and figures and everything like that. You know, because we all know tech, you know, pays pretty well, especially nowadays. But, you know, it was good money. But at the end of the day, it wasn't like no life changing money. It didn't put me in the next tax bracket and nothing like that. But it was like I saw what this opportunity could eventually lead me to. All I needed was a chance, you know, to prove myself. So, yeah, man, got there. I didn't care. It was graveyard shift. I had to be there from 12:15 at night. And then 12:45 at night and then my shift ended at 9:15 in the morning. You know,
ain't so, a bad shift. No, you probably got a lot of studying and probably got some more certs while you was doing that.
Man, I took that I took another, I failed that cloud solutions architect certification exam. I failed it again while I was working there, you know, and this time they at least provided the trainer for free, because that's when Cloud Guru bought Linux Academy and became Cloud Guru. It used to be called something Guru before that. But I was able to, I did eventually pass the solutions architect cert. And now when I passed it the second time while I was at that cloud support job, because I worked my way from graveyard shift to first shift. I went from graveyard to second shift to now I'm on a primary shift to first shift. So I'm busting my butt. You know, I'm learning, I'm gaining skills, I'm hustling. But I'm just not a great test taker, you know.
Yeah.
I suck at tests. And so I eventually passed, but I'm gonna muscle my way through. So I eventually passed it. And man, I tell you, I kid you not, soon I passed it. This was almost 2 years later. I was also going through a terrible breakup. I was recovering from a terrible breakup, heartbreak. We was in the midst of C-19. I was working remote they moved our job to remote at that time. I kid you not, I got that certification. I interviewed for this job, and probably like 2 months later, that's when I got my cloud infrastructure job offer from a different company. And that changed the game for me. That, you know, that really elevated me to a different tax bracket and really changed not just the money, but the exposure of now I'm going from working in the GUI to now working infrastructure as code, you know, working more at the back end, I never did a Git pull before. I never worked with infrastructure code, nothing, a Terraform, nothing, cloud formation template, nothing before. You know, but I got all the opportunity in that second role I had obtained, and then the game really changed for me, you know, and I started to, really hone in on my tech skills. So, I got a year later, I got laid off from that job, you know, and that's when I said, okay, I need to start paying attention to the business of tech. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, one of my senior engineers at the time was telling me, he's kind of giving me warnings and heads up, like, the organization is making, because we had bought a company, whatever. He was like, yeah, the organization is making a move. From my experience, when I worked at startups and they did da-da-da-da, this is usually the signs of it. He was a much older gentleman. He's like, he's one of the mean, those mean senior engineers. But he knew his stuff. And as long as you paid attention, took notes and worked hard, he showed you complete love and taught you so much. So he was one of my greatest managers ever. But I said, I need to learn the business, because he gave me heads up. And then before you know it, they hit us all with the, you know, everybody get on the meeting, on this call, corporate Zoom call, mute everything. Look, the chat is muted. The video is muted up. And they tell you what's happening. Your manager will contact you. And boom, I had the conversation. You know, but I also, that was my first time also receiving a severance package. And I was like, okay. So, but, you know, and I wasn't, and then I also been to therapy, because I had to deal with, they call it success remorse. Success remorse. And so I had to dip. So by the time I got laid off, I was well prepared for, you know, be able to take on the next steps, because I was like, okay, this ain't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I'm not going back to sleeping on my mama couch, back to square zero now. Now I got some experience. I got some certifications. I got some utensils I can cook with now. So all I got to do is put my hustle in it and make it work. And it did. And I ended up getting my next role out in Germany. So, you know, things really started to change for me then. So
let's hold that thought. I want to go back to the first cloud role. Mm-hmm. It was a cloud support role, right? Okay, because that's one of the first roles, like if I'm dealing with, sometimes I have some consoles or something, like I want to get in the cloud or cloud security or whatever. I say, well, let's get some type of cloud experience first. And I always tell them to kind of go that, maybe that cloud support role, because most of the time, unlike doing help desk, cloud support is a little bit more technical and will take you a little farther in your expertise versus doing help desk. So can you briefly talk about what did you, well, if you can kind of remember, but what did you do as like working cloud support?
And it basically is incident response, you know, a lot of incident response. So a lot of blacklisting IPs, whitelisting IPs, which I had to learn even what that was. The thing about cloud support engineer is it gives you a lot of grace in not knowing a lot of technicalities of cloud technology and on-premise technology. Though, and doing the job requires both, because you're going to have to learn how to SSH into machines or RDP into machines, to debug on the command line, how to run DF commands and print out utilization reports. So that cloud support role is a lot of just reporting metrics on how resources are doing, or finding causality of why resources are failing in the cloud, and present those issues to the client along with the solution to the client. And in most cases, especially in my case, we had big enterprise clients. I mean, some of the largest companies in the world. And, you know, at the time it was like Coca-Cola was one of our biggest clients. You present these solutions to them. But most of it, like a lot of people, you know, get scared of timid of cloud support roles. Most of everything that you're going to have, like they give you scripts. So you're not like coming out with these commands on your own. You're not doing everything alone. You're not figuring everything out from scratch. Everything, they have some type of tools for you, some type of automation tools for you. All you got to do is implement. They really need bodies in the seat that can communicate cloud resource issues when needed. But in the most time, most of your tasks are mundane tasks. Like you're doing the same thing repetitively around the clock. You know, I was just printing out incident reports, whitelist and blacklist and IPs, restarted EC2s that were failed. Doing the status checks, handling IAMs for incoming engineers or decomming engineers who are leaving the organization, et cetera. So just things of that sort, throughout the day on the ticketing system. And so the difference is with a cloud support role, most any cloud supports roles versus engineer roles, is you're more so working on a timed ticketing system. Versus in the engineering world, you're working on a task, and that task really isn't time constraint based on a response. Like you might have a day or two or even a week to work through a task, versus in a support role, you literally might have like up to maybe 15 minutes to respond to a ticket and about 30 minutes to respond with a solution to that ticket. Again, you're not coming with it all off of scratch. You're using your scripts and tools that they give you to find to create the solutions. And you're presenting the problem and the solution to the client so that they can make well-informed decisions and communicate that to the TAM, the technical account manager, about what changes they want to make to their environment so they don't have these issues reoccur. So basically that was it. But cool, and then cool. It exposed me to different technologies. I had to learn. It taught me how to work with SSO. I work with OKOcta. I work with, Linux. I work with PowerShell. Like all these things I wasn't accustomed to working with, you know, in my previous help desk role. So.
Nice. It's funny enough that you said a TAM and all that, because if anybody's ever studied for, you know, the cloud practitioner or AZ900, you hear those terms all the time. And so now you see the practicality of that in real time right here. And what that role gave you is what I like to call foundation.
Absolutely.
So now you can go do anything in the cloud you pretty much want to, because your foundation is solid.
Yep. You're working under the hood of the cloud. Literally, mm-hmm. When resources break down, you have to go investigate, find out where the resource is located, how it broke down, and kind of restore that resource, how to restore the service, you know, because you got to get that client back up and running. And you can be working at a non-production environment or production environment. In most cases, if you're a newbie coming on, unless you're working a prime shift, you're not working in a production environment. They're going to put you in a non-production environment. So like it's room, a lot of room for mistakes and errors. You know, cloud support engineers are very forgiving roles. And I say that most engineers, most newbies who want to make the break into cloud should immediately try to step into cloud support roles. It's the help desk of the cloud. Except you get more of it's more lucrative offer. You make a little bit more money or whatever, but you know, you gain a ton of cloud technical experience, the technical aspect, and you get to learn what other cloud avenues you want to go down, because you're working in a centralized role that's responsible for many parts of the cloud. So you're working with, getting to understand and communicate often with network engineers, because you're dealing with the cloud network. You're also working with storage engineers, because you're dealing with storage. you're working with the TAM, you learn about what a TAM is. You just find out and you kind of it's like, which one of those pathways are most interesting for me to pursue after this cloud support role? It kind of helps you create a clearer vision for where you want to go, you know, for the next 3-4 years of your career. So yeah, great place to start.
Perfect. Now I want to focus on that infrastructure role you said you got right after that. And how life-changing was that? Because now it seems like where you were kind of a generalist in a sense with the cloud support role, now you possibly have a niche in the cloud that you can work in. And so I want to talk about that position real quick.
Yeah, man, that was with a telehealth company. And that's the thing too about cloud support. I mean, can't give enough credit to cloud support roles. Again, you're working under different, so first off, you sign off on so much paperwork. Don't disregard that paperwork is just general paperwork because you're signing off on various compliance laws that are going to show up later on in your career and pay off if you add it to your resume of having worked on it, like PCI laws, GDPR laws, PII laws, PHI laws, et cetera. Those are all compliance agencies that are important, especially if you want to go the route of cloud security or any type of compliance, compliance roles, et cetera. So like, don't disregard nothing in like, take every piece from cloud support that you can. But yeah, in cloud infrastructure, man, it basically, it put me on the back end. So I got to deal with a lot of, deal face-to-face with the developers on the front end. I got to see what those jobs look like that they ran on cloud infrastructure. I had to really, my cloud support skills taught me where resources are. Cloud infrastructure taught me how to build and maintain those resources from scratch. So having to build a servers, it was a primarily AWS environment, how to build servers, EC2 servers, how to build attach storage devices to the servers, how to be careful in choosing a family type, how to right size a cloud environment, meaning that you want to make sure that your cost spend margins are, you know, pronounced to where you're not overspending. Or you try to reduce as much spending as possible because cloud waste is a huge thing. Ignorance of the cloud will cost you. You know, hooking up clients to onboarding clients to SFTP servers, creating ECS containers and dealing with containerization and dealing with the CI/CD pipeline, you know, dealing with Jenkins build, you know. Having to build out a pipeline and just so many things, man. And it was exciting for me because I was being able to, you know, in cloud support, most of your workload is in the GUI. But when you get in the IAC, the world opens up for you even more, you know. And I was just one of the ones that I love to learn already. I'm a voracious reader. And so it was fun just to be able to learn these skills and learn how this technology intertwined with each other. So, it gave a boost to my technical development skills, my dev skills, which have been a lax for me throughout my career. So it really boosted my dev skills and it boosted my confidence, most importantly, in my dev skills and my cloud skills. So that role for me just opened it. I feel like I could walk into any role because it was, they brought me on knowing that I was very junior and they wanted that the goal was to train me up to be like senior level within a year. And so that really made me confident to be able to step into any other role after that. So.
Nah, perfect. And I'm just looking at you and you said, open up your mind. And I'm just the whole time thinking like, that journey from Atlanta is all coming to fruition while you're doing it. So it's just like it's working. Like I know for like you said, you went to Durham, North Carolina. I came out here to Dallas from Shreveport and just knowing, like you said, I said, hey, within a year, I need to be in security. And like getting that first offer letter for your first job and like, you know, probably like the most that in your immediate family that has ever made, like all different stuff like you dealing with, like even have to deal with that part. But the hard part, and maybe you can say if you dealt with this or not, because we have like my audience is pretty much like a lot of Black people. And then other people that deal with this too that come from different beginnings. But
absolutely. We all
most of us most of us that get into these tech roles or get these high paying jobs, a lot of us are probably like first time corporate in our families. A lot of us are probably the people that's made the most in our families. A lot of us are considered possibly the bank to our families, to where we don't ever even get a chance to really set ourselves up because we are still helping out. And that probably is something that contributed to your survivor's remorse, maybe.
Survivor's remorse, yeah. Yeah, absolutely, man. You know, thankfully, my mom and my sisters always kind of been my safeguarding in a way where they don't let a lot of that side of the family bother me, even though some I did have those problems where exterior family members outside of the nuclear reach out to me. Oh, man, I need help this and her, I need help there. You know, people I grew up with and everything. I'm like, man, and it's mostly the men. And it was like, man, if I could do it, if I did it, I ain't have half the support you had. And I don't have the education you had. Like, why you not working? And you're a man. Like, you should be able to doing, you know, making it happen for yourself and your family too. You know, if I sacrifice, you could, nobody was in that bedroom with me when I said I'm going to become a cloud professional or die. Nobody was in there with me. That was that conversation I had with me in those four walls. And I was, nobody was on board with that. So I had a lot of that, man. That's why I had therapy matter. And therapy does matter, especially the men. It's that, because I had a lot of nights, man. It got to the point where, and this was even in my infrastructure role, because I still hadn't got rid of I still hadn't managed those demons from the past yet. And I'm making great money. I'm able to help whoever I want. I'm giving them, my mom, again, not asking for anything, but I'm voluntarily helping them, giving them things, you know, buying big gifts, doing trips, splurging, strip club, daddy, doing everything wild. But I still, my head, I still had that, what is it called? I felt like a fraud. I felt like it wasn't really real. I couldn't really pull this off again. You know,
imposter syndrome?
Huh?
So you had imposter syndrome?
Imposter syndrome was heavy. And but that just sat on top of a lot of fears and anxieties I had just from trauma, unresolved trauma from the past. So I had Dr. V, who owns therapyforblackmen.org, helped me through a lot of that, man. I mean, so much of that. Like, it was nice where I would just be sitting in my patio with a cigar and drink or whatever. And I couldn't, it was hard to just close my eyes and just sit back because the voices were loud, just in my head, loud, you know. And so my boys, my support system, my brother Mark and John and AG and everybody, they were very supportive and helping me get through those things. But yeah, man, you kind of spiral, especially when you hit that life-changing money. You spiral. You're going to spiral for a bit because it's new. Everything's new. You're scared and excited at the same time. You don't save. You don't do the things that you need to do to prepare for your future. You're still overlooking what it means to have health benefits. And I had tremendous health benefits, but you know, you don't care, man. You're in a circus. You're in the midst of a circus right now. And it really doesn't take until you hit that repeated success again to be like, okay, no, I'm not an imposter. I know what I'm doing. I know my limitations. But I know my strengths as well override my limitations. And I need to also get better at managing my life because I can lose it all, not because I won't be able to obtain opportunities, but because I don't manage the opportunities I currently have. So, all that, my credit coach, Naja, helped me make sure I get my credit right, taught me about how to budget my money. I used to want to buy if I didn't have her in my life, I would have bought an H2, a Hummer 2, and went super into debt, you know. But she said, don't do that. So I listened to her, man. And a couple of years later, I'm, you know, being able to pay my truck off, you know, and having been able to afford a house, you know, for my family. So it's like, you know, just those things, it's just part of the journey. And this is why I tell students all the time, you can't shortcut the journey. All right. Don't shortcut the journey and become a one tech wonder, you know, one tech job wonder, because those trials, those errors are necessary in your growth. You know, all these pieces add up to make you better and better of a man or woman for yourself, for your family in the near future. But you have to trust the process and go through the process, go through the struggle. It's a part of it. Without any of those intangible social aspects of this journey in tech, in cloud tech, you're going to just fumble opportunity, opportunity, opportunity and lose yourself in the whole thing and just be like, you know what? Tech ain't for me. Cloud tech ain't for me. This stuff is stupid. You're going to be one of those persons. So.
Yeah. No, you're so right, though, because that's what we've seen over the pandemic. Some people took some shortcuts, got in, and they ain't here no more, or they kept getting laid off. We ran into a lot of them. It's a post I shared the other day on my story where a guy was, and it was funny though, because these was white people. He was blasting this dude for like trying to sell people on how to be LinkedIn influencers and trying to get in cybersecurity. But he was like, bro, you can't hold a job down. What are you going to show them?
Hello.
Put them on blast. Like it was crazy. I used to see a guy like that too. He was always acting like he was a senior DevOps dude, but every time I turned around, he was laid off. I'm like, bro, what is going on?
Man, listen, man. You got to learn the business. You can't, like, this stuff, you don't want the quick hit opportunities. You don't want that. It's not going to last long. Trust me. Like, you've been around in this industry. I've seen just about every influencer come through. Even outside of tech, prior to tech, when I was a full-time entrepreneur, I've seen all the MLM ballers.
I was going to ask you about, bro, I was going to get a question about MLMs because, like, that entrepreneur to MLM pipeline.
Man, boy, they be addicted. That Kool-Aid be in their veins. Veins. Yeah, you don't need a boss.
Six-figure earners in here.
This video is being sponsored by Textual Consulting. Are you still struggling to get into cybersecurity? Are you not getting interviews? Do you have a bad resume? Or is it all of the above? Well, if that's you, then we got you covered at Textual Consulting. My name is Henry Davis. I'm a career coach and a cybersecurity professional, and I've helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people get into cybersecurity with my coaching and my content that you've seen in various places. Now, I specialize in specifically getting people in the blue team, that would be incident response or SOC analysts. I can cover everything from your entry level to your medium to your advanced skills and really help you outperform your resume. You don't believe me? Check out some of these testimonials that I've had from recent clients. So if you're interested, click the link in my bio, textualconsulting.com/offerings to see what offerings that we have available for you. Now, back to the show.
Man, listen, man. Nothing beats consistency and just financial management over time. I've seen it so many times. People loudly climb to the top and silently fall to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
So many of them. So you gotta be patient and trust the process. And if that means you got to get a little 9-to-5 job while you train just to maintain and pay your bill, so be it. You know, if that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do, what you have to do in order to maintain and learn from what it took. Like, that means that when you get them fat checks and you get them, you know, the bonuses or you get them benefits and all that, put money away, you know, for the rainy days, for when things happen, put some away for investing into some assets or something that'll become an asset. Don't do it to bowl. Why accumulate all this success and opportunity just to give it away to a group of people who don't even know your name, who won't even give your mama some canned goods to be able to feed the family, the kids. So it's like, you know, stop just all that flexing and balling and all that stuff. To me, it shouts insecurity. It shouts that somebody's just lost and they're leading a lot of lost people. And to me, at the end of the day, it's like good riddance, because the industry doesn't need to be filled with you all anyway. So I'm glad you all got in quickly and now you're getting exited out just as quickly and you're deterred from it. So that means the true people who are supposed to be here and need to be here will be here and make the best of it. So.
No, that's facts. Because, I mean, like you say, if you go into some of the people who are very flashy or just want to be seen or known, that comes from immaturity or when they were younger, wanting to be that person that they wanted to see. You know, they want to be dripped out like Ric Flair and not knowing, realizing, hey, he's a character on TV. He's helping them market stuff. You know, other people.
They were guys who never got that kind of attention, you know, or women who never got that kind of attention before. You know, they don't know what it's like to be liked by a lot of people, or favorable, or they don't know how to decipher what's real, genuine love versus fake love. And it's like, look, I get it. We come from a culture of people that are flashy people. I get that. Like, you know, Mansa Musa, I get that. We with that. I get that. But moderation too. You know, you have to at least tell people the truth of what they will endure in their journeys, especially their tech journeys. Like, that's what I'm all about, keeping it real. Like, because you got to understand, you're not going to pay the consequences when things go wrong. When that person that you told that all they got to do is get a certification and they get a job, mm-hmm. when they got that certification and they can't get a job, but they put all their last dollar into that certification, now they can't feed themselves and their family, now they're considering doing something crooked, you're not going to go pay for that. You're not covering, helping them cover them bills. You're not helping bail them out of jail. Like, that the consequences is what I want all leaders to understand when you're influencing and leading people. Consider the consequences of those who will follow your advice and it not work out for them. Are you considering that? That's why I tell students all the time, like, don't take my camp or whatever if it's going to cause you to go into unnecessary debt, or if it's going to cause you to have to give your last. Like, maintain the job. Like, don't have these lofty ambitions. Like, yes, it can work for you, but it's a process. Don't think that this is going to be an overnight success thing. You know, that's why I don't even ball. Like, I don't even show off the flashy stuff or this cool, like, even travel. Like, I travel a lot, but I denounce traveling. Like, I'm not a big, you should travel guy. And I've been all over the world, but it's like, because it's like, you have so many great things here, like in America, in home, where you are currently. Like, you have, explore that, you know, be cherish what you have. Therefore, when you get more, you're going to cherish it even more. And then you'll be able to have a compound effect. You'll be able to accumulate more. But it comes with starting to appreciate what you have now, not trying to live out these rapper dreams, you know, of, oh, I should have this. I should have that. I should have this. It's like, it's not realistic, bro. And when you know this, sitting on these calls with other engineers and senior engineers and directors, these guys are making high six figures. You're on the calls with CEOs who are making seven figures. They're not on these calls flashy. They're not in these calls drippy and dripped and drip, drip, and in the back of a Lambo, in the back of a Rolls Royce. Yeah, I'm sure they have those things, but when they're doing business and conducting business, it's not like that. They're handling business. They're professional, usually got on the collar shirt. You know, they usually laid back, you know, they usually got the camera on in some big garage or some big room that they got made into an office or whatever, and they just handling business, man. So what I would encourage your followers to do is just get into the act of being able to understand true wealth and true longevity and those people who are the masters of that, not the persons who are the masters of overnight success.
Nah, man, you was on it. And that's one of the reasons why with this platform, my supporters know that I look at sometimes people from afar. Like, I looked at you for like a minute. And I was like, cool, I rock with like what he got going on. I want to bring him on because they know I bring authentic guests on. They know I'm not selling my audience to people just to advertise stuff I don't believe in. So anything I've ever advertised or people who got their own platforms I bought on, I believe they're solid. And so that's why, like, if I rock with them, then my supporters rock with them. And they know from my content, they can go back from years of me just being solid and just being honest with you and telling you, hey, why someone is marketing something to you. Because if we're going to piggyback Ruka on the MLM lifestyle, that's what we saw with the tech influencer thing. It's very similar. It's very similar with it to get somebody in. I want to say I'm going to say it, but in a way, it's not really a shot.
Go here, because I'm coming behind your back with the whole right arm on them. Go ahead.
Listen, no, but it's like, it's people like, prime example, like, this is what I do. When I see a new influencer pop out, I go and see maybe how long they've been in the industry, where they worked at, who they
first know, you go see if they're an actual engineer or not. That's what you really do, but go ahead.
No, I do. I see all that. I see that. Then, okay, what's your platform about? Who are these people that took your platform? Can I find them? Are they fake people? Are the claims of your programs outlandish? Is the story that you're saying, now, everything going to be believable, but are you really lying? And so it's a small world when everybody who's making content or the people who know people they talk. We know who's actually telling the truth about their journey, and we know who's capping because they have an audience that is going to give them some residuals when it comes to affiliate links and stuff like that, which is cool. I think you should just be upfront about that stuff versus like acting like
absolutely
in your heart of hearts that's what you want to do.
Absolutely, man. And it's, you know, and I used to be on Recruiter's Net, you know, tech recruiters is specifically, especially during the pandemic. Like I used to be on the neck. Then when they used, it made me cringe so bad when they was talking about, oh yeah, you can make six figures. Look, I work at this Fortune 500 company or tech fame company, and I only work 2 hours a day, and I just get to sit on the rooftop and sip coffee, and you know, I go work out and do anything I want, and you know, all, and then my day is done, you know, and it's like, that's not so far. First off, there's so many few opportunities like that exist. Second off, they don't, the company organizations likely know you're not doing it. All right. And then two is like it's, again, it sells people a false hope of what they're to endure. Because I promise you, most people aren't as pretty as you, aren't as attractive as you, aren't as clever talking as you, aren't as driven, work around the clock, around the hours, don't get sleep as you. You know, that's not going to be the reality for most folks. And it's like, and now you hear this thing about, oh, you know, Black folks deserve to live a life of luxury. Okay, cool. The thing about it is, you can have luxury goods and luxury items, and if that's your thing, that's fine, right? However, you shouldn't make it your goal to want to acquire things that another group produces that will make them rich and make you poor, all right? So think all at the end of the day, you have to follow what consistently works for those who've retained wealth and have grown their wealth. Follow those people and trends. Don't just follow the hot flashes, because what happens, just like you follow those hot tech influencers who flash things in front of you, you're going to try to follow the hot flashy technology trends that's also supposed to be popular. And then you're going to drop what you're doing and try to pursue that thing. And when you try to pursue that thing and it's not hot no more, you're lost, because now you have no skills. You don't have the skills from the first course of action and path you on, and you don't have any skills from the second path that you're on. So it's like, you know, when I try to speak to my crowd and my audience, it's about being realistic, it's about being manageable, and it's about, most importantly, being accountable. So.
No, that's facts, like I said. And I'm just putting all the MLMs on notice, the Amways,
I remember right now, the gold bags, the gold tea.
You should be here.
You should be.
Well, Avengers. Who else you got out here?
I used to be on their neck on Facebook. I got notorious post being on MLM's neck because they should
go back on my
Vector. I'll go back as far as Vector Dives.
Vector. If you go on my LinkedIn, bro, you'll see like me giving like the MLMs hell. Like you'll see me screenshotting stuff and I'll ask somebody, hey, how long you been in MLM?
Just one thing I respect about you is that I'll be in groups and stuff, and listen, you know, the thing that bothers me about some of our folk that get bold around just our folk and they want to deny things or challenge things among just our folk. I'm like, if you mm-hmm. really believe what you believe and you want to stand on what you stand on, go on LinkedIn and say that. I want to see you challenge other groups. I want you where other groups are all there in the open. I want you to have that same energy for when they're around, because that's going to tell me you're really bold enough. You really believe and you really know what you think you know, because those people, mm-hmm. you're going to have people coming, them boys with them long beards and them tattoos everywhere and they there who are shrewd engineers. I'm talking about shrewd engineers. They study white papers for fun. All right. They have GitHub communities they're a part of. They will come and rip your whatever this dream that you're selling or apart. But that'll show me what you made of. And so, yeah, I remember seeing your post. I was like, oh, that guy's good. That guy's good. Because if you can stand in them, it's like standing in the executive room and standing on your beliefs, and your beliefs stand on truth. And if a lot of people, you know, support it who come from other groups and other backgrounds. Oh, yeah, you want to you're standing on gold. Otherwise, it's all cap. You know, it's easy to talk in black circles or your whatever your group nationality is circles and be able to tout your horn and say this is real, this is fake, you can make this. That's easy because it's when a closed, controlled environment. But when you went outside in the wild on LinkedIn, yeah. We're going to see what you really made of.
Yeah, for sure. Because people come through, they say stuff in the comments, whatever. One thing about me, the difference between them and me is whatever you say to me, I can just make content out of what you say and put it on wax. And I know somebody's going to send it to you so you can hear it. Because I do, I ain't going to lie, a little bit of like how I pie, I put hip-hop culture a little bit into it. So if I feel like it's never really been a time for me to actually like just directly like diss somebody or whatever. But if I have to, I'll put it on wax so you know exactly who I'm talking to when you hear it. Or if I got to sneak diss you in some type of way, you're going to know I'm talking about you.
Yeah.
So that's why you can't beat the person with the mic anyway. You can go on what you want to, but they're going to hear this. Nobody might not read your post. So now you said you got the role in Germany. Did you move and work in Germany or what happened with that?
Yeah, man. I got a call. I was actually interviewing for AWS. That's how crazy this was. I was interviewing for like multiple companies. Like, I probably had three companies, big companies, big lucrative salaries I was interviewing for. And I was going into my third round. I had just passed the technical round with AWS. So I was going to my third round. You know, usually when you make it to that third or fourth round, it's usually good money because it's just a personality test at that point. And So I got a call from a foreign number. I usually don't pick them up, but I was like, you know what? Let me see what's going on. Picked it up, and it was a woman with a foreign voice. And I was like, she kind of sounded British, kind of sounded foreign. I was like, doesn't sound like a scam call. So anyway, took the interview, did it with them. They said that, you know, they really sold me on, you know, they wanted to invest in me. You know, they wanted to bring me up and do all this cloud stuff in Azure because I had just got my Azure fundamental certification as well. And they liked my background infrastructure with the medical company. And so anyway, they said, hey, we're going to fly you out to Boston to interview. I said, for real? Now, I ain't never been to Boston in my life now. You know, I don't been around for a couple of things. I'm making some good money, but I'm still kind of, you know, I'm still from the hood, you know, from the trenches. So I get excited in a fly opportunity to a place that I've been.
That was
so,
me going to Connecticut last year.
Oh, that's dope. That's dope. You went to the good part, man. I heard all the party and what's happening and the good stuff and the good foods in Connecticut on that side of the country.
I was surprised. Yeah, we was in Stanford. I was surprised.
Yeah, man. I ain't niffing in Boston. You hear me? Niff. And I want them to get mad at me and call me. But so anyway, I'm out there. I interview, and apparently I did so well, they offered me the job on the spot. And so they say, yeah, we're going to fly you out to Germany to train. I said, for real? Now, I ain't never been to Germany before. I ain't even had aspirations to go to Europe. You know, I'm not one of those guys that's eager to be on, you know, on them, you know, them type of folks land anyway. You hear me? So I was like, cool. So I went, you know, I talked to my wife about it and everything. And I went, trained there for a month, came back, worked, and did that. And that was great. I was able to work alongside those engineers. Those Germans, man, they are shrewd engineers, man. They know what they know. It's not a lot of, they don't believe in a lot of fluff. You can't fluff your way through. Having conversations with them around technical tasks, and they had this software and everything that I was supposed to help migrate to Azure databases through their different warehouse clients that they had, because they had like a chain shift tool. And man, it was a great experience, man. The food sucked there. The food was terrible, but it's a naturally beautiful place. It's a very historic place. They still have buildings intact that were made like in the 1300s. It's a very democratized country. Like, you don't see any homeless people laying on the ground or anything like that. Very clean. Sundays, I'm so ghetto. I hate to admit it, but on Sundays is like their quiet days. So you're not supposed to make a lot of noise. Most of the shops and bakeries and restaurants are closed, and people just kind of fellowship in a few areas. They gave me a rental car. Man, I'm over here in Germany bumping Young Dolph, man. Going 60 seconds, never let him play me. You know, I'm bumping Southside. I know, but I was cutting up, man. So, and then went to Switzerland as well. But yeah, it was short term, man. They ended up laying me off. because they was making changes to the actual role itself. I guess they didn't see as much business from the American side as they did on the European side. And so that ended, but it was still a tremendous experience for me, you know, and I ended up picking up my, it's crazy because every time I got laid off or left a job, the roles and the opportunities increased. So I actually then got about a full tech role, a full FTE role with a medical company here, based out of Boston again, but here, and it was as a cloud architect this time. So now I'm going from support engineer to infrastructure engineer to database administrator to now I'm a cloud architect. And I'm working in Google. This is a whole 100% Google shop. I've never worked in Google shop.
Me either, old GCP.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, man. GCP, yeah. Man. It's boring, man, but it's cool because you get to work with a lot of startups and you get to work on a lot of cutting edge data for businesses. But Google's, right? Their stuff is, you just got to really know their technology. Their training documents aren't that great, but their environment to work in is pretty easy, to be honest with you. They just have firewalls that you have to maintain instead of security groups and NACLs and everything that you have to maintain with AWS and Azure. But I got bored with it really fast. I did some great stuff. I was able to stand up an entire environment by myself. But I got bored with it fast and left that opportunity and then got to work with, I didn't get fired this time. I left the job and got an opportunity to work with DHS, you know, Department of Homeland Security. And, you know, the rest was history. So.
Yeah, that's a cushy job right there. So did you get a top secret?
Nah, I got trust? The public trust, man. The public trust. Okay. Yeah. And that's one thing I learned too, man, is that being a contractor versus being actual direct hire is different. Unless it's a direct hire that's a crazy opportunity. If they offer me top level clearance and the money is great, I wouldn't go work for the feds again, in my opinion. Especially not on no contract. Unless I'm holding the contract.
Why not?
Because even though you're on a contract, your contract can be term based. Like mine was supposed to be for like, I don't want to give it away, but it was a couple years, and that couple years was about a 7-figure sum. And so I'm like, I'm going to be here for a while. I'll take that, you know? So, but I didn't know that contract can end at any time. And what happens is, companies that contract with the feds, and this is why I tell people you got to learn the business that you're in, it's a cloud business, a tech business. Companies that contract with the federal government, you might have one main contract supporter, one person, the person who owns the contract. What they'll do is subcontract out the work, meaning they'll find recruitment companies to go hire out the talent, and those recruitment companies will hire the talent through their own contract. So you're like a subcontract person. And so what happens is they have to renegotiate those. They have to do like annual renewal of terms of that contract with the feds, because the feds can say, well, we're committed to do this deal with you for about 10 years or so. But there's also clauses in there where like every 3 years you got to renegotiate because the economy may change, things may change, and the infrastructure and the needs, whatever, what have you. And these are things that you just won't be privy to because they're executive level conversations that they don't even want you to be privy to. And so when they renew, that means your task number that was given to you can be relinquished. You know, so even though they told you that it's going to be there for a certain amount of years and you're just going to have a certain amount of earning, now it's changed. And so when I experienced that, I was like, yeah, I'm cool on that. So I would never do it again. It's just not worth it for me.
Yeah, I definitely know how that could be. That's one thing people don't know about, like the contracts. Like these recruits are hitting you up about these contract jobs. You kind of just like, you know, they say you're supposed to be doing 6 months, but you never know what could change with the money. So you always got to have your head on a swivel.
Always.
And be creative with it. Like I'm real quick to, if a recruiter hit me about a job that's contract, I'm like, yo, okay. Hey, they're interested in doing C2C, because at least
right,
I can get my benefit out of it on the back end versus all the other stuff I have to do being W-2. And I'm like, technically, I was not working for y'all. My company was.
Yep. Yep, absolutely. Get bigger pay for C2C. And on top of that, unless they're also giving you, if they're giving you like a if I would say a security level clearance would be also make it beneficial, because there's so many jobs that you can only get if you have a security level clearance. Sometimes you'll just get a job by default because there's not that much tech talent out there that have a security level clearance or higher. So that's also a benefit as well. But working directly for the government, people think, oh, it's cushy because the longevity of it is hard for them to fire you. Yeah, but the pay ain't great. Like,
yeah, you gotta be up there.
Huh?
You gotta be like on.
Yeah. You gotta be like a L4, L7 high senior level position to really see a pay like that's like, oh, now that's impressive. But if you're anything under that, the pay is not impressive at all. And working with the feds, you know, again, it depends on what your aspirations are, and it depends on, you know, what you're comfortable with, where you're at in your career. You know, if you're in a position where you have some experience, well, you know, you can navigate, you got options, you know, you don't have to be confined to those opportunities. But if you're someone that kind of need a job and you need anything you can get, you know, do your thing. But yeah, just learn the business, man. Just know that none of this stuff is permanent, you know? And so you got to keep that hustler's mentality of being prepared for whatever comes next around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I also say to add into that, never stop interviewing.
Never. I mean, never cut jobs. Your hopes open to work on them. Never.
Facts. Yeah. Facts. I was talking to a friend. They had some layoffs at this company. And one of the ladies there who's cool, she had an interview probably like 10 years.
Yeah.
And she ain't been getting no hits on her resume and a lot of stuff's going on. It's like, yeah, because, I mean, think about it, she probably hadn't interviewed in a while. So you just need to, one of the reasons why you want to stay interviewing is because whether you do good or not, you'll figure out what companies are looking for. And that'll help you study and get those skills. So in case something happens, you back in the ball game, you not starting over from scratch because you don't know what they're looking for.
So yep.
That's why every couple of months or something you want to interview just to stay fresh. And that's a skill that you really don't want to lose, but you will lose it if you don't use it.
No, absolutely. You definitely want to stay interviewing. And also to even add to that, just to be able to add recruiters to your network. I can't tell you how many recruiters that I've just added to my network by just building relationships with, even for jobs that didn't go through or what have you. Because, you know, really good recruiters are hard to come by. You know, I'm talking about a recruiter that's going to advocate for you, that understands mm-hmm. the needs of the client, have relationships with the clients, and that are cool in communicating with you. Because, you never know, not just you need an opportunity, but you might have a friend or a mentee or a student or whoever needs a look at their resume or needs some opportunities down the pipeline, and that recruiter can help be that bridge for them. So yeah, you know, never stop interviewing. Never. I never turn my open to work sign off. Even when you're doing business when you're doing tech business as the business yourself, even when you're in a position to win those contracts yourself, just stay after it, man.
Got to today. Had a recruiter I talked to like a month ago, and they hit my line because number one, they reached out to me for a role that I knew I wasn't the best fit for. But a director I interviewed with a couple of years back at a company, he's super cool dude that he had recently got laid off. I was like, yo, this ain't a good fit for me, but he would be dope for it. So she reached back out to me, said thanks, like he's super cool. She called me back, was like, yo, you remember that role we talked about a while back? Like, what if we could give you those concessions that you were asking for when it comes to like being on site and like coming early and leaving early as well to, you know, get back to your kids or get right. from school and all that other stuff. Like, I was like, we might could talk about it. I was like, everything's negotiable. I'm telling you, if they can't find nobody and you got what they need, everything's negotiable.
Man, and I tell people that all the time, man, like you will be highly surprised even still today how many, the lack of qualified candidates that are out there, you know, and you got to first off consider that there's a large portion of the talented pool, talent pool who aren't American citizens. So you got mm-hmm. that by default. Then on top of that, those who don't have certifications. Then you got to factor those who don't have the experience. Then you got to factor in those who don't have the technical skills. You can have experience and still don't know what you're doing. So that window, that pool starts to shrink real, real quick. And then let alone don't have good interviewing skills. You'll be highly surprised what you qualify for and what you actually get by just applying yourself. But if you never just apply for the role, you never pick up the phone for the recruiter, have the calls. I'm not talking about these foreign recruiters, but like American recruiters, because you know how they get.
Listen, hey, I promise you, I sent it to my mans earlier. I said, hey, bro, I think I just caught one of these Indian recruiters in a scam, bro. Dude reached out to me for a role, talking about like W-2 or C2C. Hey, he was like, it'd be 3 days on site or whoop-de-woo. And I said, okay, where's the building at? Bro gave me, like, so the clients would be for Verizon. Bro gave me the address. It's like somewhere in downtown Dallas. I was like, say, bro, this is a Verizon store. I like, to my knowledge,
not a Verizon store, bro.
Bro, I promise you, I'll show you what you call it.
Oh, man.
I was like, to my knowledge, Verizon, they headquarters is in Irving. So I'm just like, after I said that, he didn't say nothing back. So I knew.
Yeah, you got to be careful, man. And when they say give you a social, give them a fake number. Don't make the number up. Don't ever give your real info away, man. You know, and you know, this is funny.
That happened to my homie. He out there in Atlanta. He believes he had gave his last four or something to one of them recruiters. And he seen, he got an alert on one of his like credit things. Somebody had tried to get, had got like two cards or something.
See? Nah. I rarely ever respond to them. I just tell them, send a job to my email. I used to be really bad. I'd be talking on the phone like, shoot. Like, nah, man, stop calling my phone. Because they'll blow you up now.
Listen, I had my number on Dice. But they was calling me like 6 and 7. Oh, I didn't take my number off. And I got two numbers. I got a business line and primary. If they caught the primary answer, they caught the business. I was like, hey, fam.
Oh, man, that's so real. Yeah. But my wife has talked me into being nicer with them. So I just politely decline or just tell them to send me an email. But yeah, boy, they were, boy, that's to you. So yeah, make relations, man, especially with good American recruiters. And you got some terrible American recruiters too. You might relate to this. Sometimes you have a tech recruiter call you who's not familiar with tech. Most of them aren't tech professionals at all, but these persons are like just far removed from the tech world, but they're just doing this job or whatever. And they ask you a slew of technical questions that you know they have no idea what you're talking about and what you're asking. And when you provide answers, because it's not the answer that they don't see on that little sheet of answers mm-hmm. that's supposed to be, they think it's the wrong answer. Or sometimes they ask you to expound on that answer. I'm like, if I expound, you still won't. Like, those be the most annoying type of persons. And usually those jobs are the jobs you don't want anyway. Well, I don't. So,
yeah, that's facts, especially at companies. I want to get into this, though, man. Let's talk about the present, like your company and helping people get into the cloud. Let's talk about that. What are you seeing people struggle with when it comes to getting into the cloud?
Yeah, man. So most recently got another success story. One of our students, she hit me about a year ago. And basically, I remember she messaged me on a messenger and talked about wanting to get in cloud because she saw me promoting or whatever. And, you know, she went through my bootcamp training. We also did a blitz job applying training with her, et cetera. So anyway, you know, it started a year ago. And she literally just this month started. Well, last month started her tech security role, you know, so, and just a woman who comes from customer service, no tech degree, anything like that, just a slew of projects that I had her do. And she did get her Azure fundamental certification. So I was really excited about that. She was just one of those ones. You know, you come across those students who work really hard and they, as I used to tell her all the time, you have what it takes you. You literally just haven't gotten the right opportunity. Now you've got the search, you got the project experience on your resume, you got the technical knowledge, you literally just haven't gotten the right opportunity yet. And then literally she ended up finding the right opportunity. So my whole bootcamp and everything premise on is like a five week camp, totally immersive. The video is class based. The videos, the projects and everything are video based, so they're released on a weekly basis, just for people who don't have time. just to be time flexible. However, after each project, after each video, we do mandatory meetings, Q&A meetings, to discuss the class. As far as discussing things you might be lost on, do Q&As, as far as, you know, questions that you need answers to, and the whole mentoring process, as well as provide ongoing support. It's myself and my career architect, person Tiffany Hall, as well. She does all my tech resumes. And then we also have a new person on the team, Ryan Wright, who's an Azure IAM engineer. And we basically put our students through. One of the most things I'm proud of is for the first time this summer, we had teenagers in our boot camp. One was 14, other is 19, and literally had put them through our boot camp. And we have them build out this three-tier architecture where they have a web app, database app, and they set up disaster recovery for it all, which is a senior level skills. I've even showed them the jobs where these were senior level tech jobs that required that those persons know a three-tier technology and how to implement it. And so anyway, they built it in the 5-week frame. And I've been posting about it on our YouTube channel, Be Cloud Engineers, what have you. But so that showed me if these teenagers can do something really complex that they had no idea, we do Linux programming as well. If they completed all our classes and everything, all our training within our time period, then I know these adults can. So that was kind of my real testament to see, am I doing something that's probably too hard, too senior level for newbies? Because this was a new class I was rolling out. Prior to, we had other different types of cloud projects, more broken up. So anyway, the success I found is that usually those who are workhorses that don't mind being pushed and driven, because again, even though the videos are video, it's immersive, hands-on. It's very live because we're there with you throughout the entire camp. I've been on calls with students as late as 1 a.m. in the morning. My wife told me to stop that. But working through projects and debugging and et cetera, it's not the projects themselves and everything that makes you a really good engineer by the end of my camp. It's the technical troubleshoot that's going to make you a really good engineer. And so the premise of my boot camp is to train newbies with cloud skills, particular cloud engineering skills, and to be able to, become cloud support engineers, come into their first tech role, as well as help desk professionals who want to convert into cloud careers themselves by equipping them with those same skills. So even though the premise of it is cloud engineering, just like cloud support, it's the nucleus of the cloud. So you're gaining networking skills, database skills, storage skills, IAM skills, infrastructure's code skills, blah, 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 all from one centralized location. And we found that to be best suited for our students to make the easier learning journey for them, a more direct learning journey for them. And it teaches them to be able to not only do the technical aptitude, but understanding the business cause reasons why they're building out such architects. And so that's been the great part. The great part is the success stories. Another one from who started off with me, she was worked in a lingerie store in South Carolina, and now she's about 8 months later, after taking one of my training and mentorship, she ended up getting a mobile engineering job with the feds in DC, relocated her and everything. So being able to help students like that, I find that the ones who succeed the most are just self-driven. I'm there. I'm really just a guide. I'm just telling them exactly what they need to train for, the exact certifications they need to train for, the exact tech skills and projects they need to do, and helping them through each of those and how to create their resume the right way to be appeasing and attractive to recruiters, as well as what to expect in the technical rounds. So I'm just really the guide showing them exactly what to do. They're already self-driven on doing the to-do part. So that's what I found to be the most driven. Both men and women. I found that, I will say this though, as far as the cons that you talked about, found that the cons are women often struggle with the confidence factor. The confidence factor as far as, is this enough? Should I apply for this role? It's asking for a little bit more than what I have. Am I good enough to interview? Can I actually pass the interview? Like all those confident factors. Men, they don't care. They just go for it. They just say, shoot, I think I got enough. I'm going to go anyway, you know, and go after the opportunities. The con with on the men's side is that the men oftentimes lack the detail-orientedness of being a professional that the women have. The women that take, they take great technical documentation that we have them do, you know, the great pictures, videos, technical, beautified attacks, easy to read, go to their medium, blah, blah, blah. You know, are very professional, diligent, showing up on time, punctual. And the guys just, man, just halfway do the technical documentation, don't do some of the, you know, don't always show up on time, you know, they think they can just blast it through things at the end of the course or whatever, or at the end of camp or whatever. They just think that they can just blaster their way through things and end up having a longer turnaround time or getting opportunities because they think they can take away from a training what they need, they think they need, and that's it. They don't need to take away anything else. And it's like, no, you're missing the whole pie that you need to be delivered to the customer, not just the filling, all right, of the pie. So those are the two cons and pros, and the worst way. And again, you don't have to go through a boot camp. You don't have to go through a course. You don't have to get a degree. You can self-taught yourself the whole way through, or you can do all four. I always say there's no wrong way to train. The only wrong way to train is to procrastinate. Because when you procrastinate, no matter if you went to a college and got a degree, no matter if you went to a boot camp, no matter if you get a course, no matter if you self-taught, you're not going to finish the journey into getting into your first clown role or getting into an elevated role because you procrastinate, you know. And procrastination comes from all kinds of reasons. But if you don't deal with that, if you don't confront your issue with procrastinating, you're going to have an extremely tough, stubborn journey. So that's going to be a little.
Yeah, no, I agree. I know, like, for example, one of my guys that I worked with last year who got in the cloud, no background whatsoever. He had a construction background. And now he's a cloud engineer. So awesome. He was one of them go-getters. He was networking with people while doing Uber and stuff at the time.
And that's the thing too, is like, no matter if you have who's helping you, who's training you throughout the way, there's still going to be a portion of it. No matter what degree you have, there's going to be a portion of it where it's self-taught. As I talked about at the beginning of this, you're going to have to do some things outside the scope of your training to add to the pieces of your training, but it all matters. It's all going to matter because how you train is how you're going to perform in the actual role. So, we're just big on creating the actual work environment. Like we do tickets in our class. Like you submit tickets, just like you would at work in actual role, go do tickets, you know? And if you suck at doing tickets, that means when you get an actual role, you're going to suck at doing tickets, you know, and you're not going to have that job for long. So, it's all about just drive, man, just determination, man. And I don't want anybody or deal with anybody who wants a quick turnaround or who wants something, the easy way out. You know, I don't entertain. I try not to entertain those types of people. I try to scare them away from getting into my camp, you know. But if you're willing to understand this is going to be a long-term thing, but it's going to be very fruitful for you, and I'm building you for the future. Like I'm building you to be a cloud professional in the role, not just building you to get a job, not just building you to get and have a nice resume. No, I want you to, when you get in the role, you're not shocked by anything. You're going to be like, oh, we had a ticketing system. Oh, we dealt with these EC2 servers. Oh, we configured a network. Oh, it's not a, I don't know what I'm doing. Damn, they got me on this. Damn. You know, so, and it's just, again, it's just, that's just a concept, bro. Not just for myself, but what I see the struggles of other people trying to train themselves or other boot camps or other college. The biggest thing, I think the misconception is that I see a lot of people think they can go get these degrees, especially these cybersecurity degrees, et cetera, from these well-promoted college courses online, and think that that's going to be the goal they're taking. You still have to end up going through a boot camp because they don't have any technical skills, don't have any certification. They still don't know the career guidance aspect. Like it's I just see a lot of people, man, they really think that this is a one shot. You just need a one thing, one ticket thing. It's going to be my golden ticket. No, it's projects, certifications, and social ambition. That's the winning formula for you.
Yep. That's on the podcast episode that we already dropped the audio this week. We reacted to a video of one of my guys named Kyrie, and he was talking about how, like, it's not just going to be one thing that's going to help you get into, like, cybersecurity. It's like what the boot camps sometimes do or lack and the schools lack is they don't show you the career acquisition process and how that's separate. That's like he said, like, a whole separate process, which I agree with, because that's what people struggle with when they come to me, of getting the job. Like, I tell everybody, learning the skills to get in the cyber, cloud, wherever you want to do, that's the easy part.
That's the easy part.
How to market yourself and get in front of the people and interview and get the job and impress them. That's the hard part. That's the part that you're probably not going to get taught somewhere.
Absolutely. And that we felt that, and that's why we had our career architect, Tiffany, in there to help them prepare. Like, she's a recruiter. So she shows them the back end of what recruiters look for in resumes, how they do control F5s for certain skills, how to format resume. Like, we took care. We want our bootcamp to be a one-stop shop, you know, for your cloud training needs to prepare you to be a professional, not just to get a job, to be a cloud professional. And though it's cloud engineering, doesn't mean that you're locked into just that career path. It opens up the opportunity for multiple cloud roles or tech roles. But people just got to understand that, you know, it's going to take some hustle and stop listening to, you know, these big shot influencers who likely most of them don't have any technical skills. Or, you know, another thing too is coming is where, you know, you have some influencers who degrade boot camps or degrade any self-taught methods outside of just doing everything for free on your own. And while you can, there's just some people who don't prefer that. It's just like VIP parking. Some people want to park for free in the back in the gravel. And some people want that VIP service, want to pull up and have a chauffeur park their car for them. You know, so it's all, that's why I say there's no wrong way to train. The only wrong way is procrastination. And most people just procrastinate because they see this, they develop these lofty goals and lofty ambitions and they think it's going to happen immediately. And when it doesn't, now they envy tech. Now they think tech is stupid. Yeah. They don't think anybody can do tech. They say, oh, you got to have all this experience and da 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 da. They become naysayers, you know. And those people who deny boot camps or courses or whatever.
I think I know who you're talking about.
I'd be like, I say nothing on those posts or whatever because it's like their crowd or whatever. But, and I try to mute that stuff. But it's like, not even because I got a boot camp or where have you, but I just been like this. It's like, you know, I always say you have to account for the mistakes and the losses that people occur during this self-training journey. Mm-hmm. If you're not able to account for that.
What you're learning is right.
Huh?
I said a person who's like self-learning don't even know what they're learning if it's right or not.
That's it. They'd be Googling all day and then get analysis by paralysis. So paralysis by analysis.
Right. It's like, I think people who push stuff like that are kind of trying to gatekeep in a sense, because you can fast track somebody's career by just knowing the right person.
That's it.
Like, I got a client right now who was making 50K at a dead end sock job. And it's on my Instagram. Mm-hmm. Based on me helping prepare for the interview, based on my connections of knowing that worked at the company, like saying, hey, this dude right here, I know he's going to speak up good for him. This man then got an offer of all in all, base comp 120K with total comp 132.
Life changing. Don't change this whole life.
You don't normally get a jump like that for free. He invested in his career and got something out of it.
That's it, man.
And that's what I tell people. Like, you can, I'm not against people doing whatever they want to, but don't try to shame them for doing something, because we all got to pay for something we want. Because, like, sure, you don't have to buy whatever new car. Go get you a jalopy. Go get in that then and drive around and see what that gets you.
Yep.
Not far.
Yep.
That's sometimes the same thing that happened to you when you self-study. You be all over the place, and one day you're studying this and that. You ain't got no path. You complaining about stuff.
Man, I got it. And sometimes what hurts you the most is the people closest to you who kind of take your advice and take you for granted. It's crazy because the people who don't know you think you're a hero. But the people closest to you, your friends or family, whatever, they look at you like, And it's like, I got this one friend who, man, this dude, I've been telling him what to do from day one, 4 years ago. And he always took my advice for granted. Always. Every time I gave him, and this is one of the types where every time I give him an assignment, he come back and with more questions instead of just doing the research and trying to figure out that assignment or follow through on the assignment. He ended up paying for going to a college and thought that was going to be his saving grace, right? Because great marketing, like you said, they told about, oh yeah, you can do this and there with this degree, da da da. Got the degree, did the whole graduation, came back to me, still can't even sniff at a role. Don't know what to do. Like you said, it's all about figuring out who the right persons are to talk to. And sometimes if that means you got to make an investment, then make an investment. Like I said this on my live last night. I know we're running short on time, but if you're going to invest in. But at the end of the day, just understand that the reason that people, And so we as engineers, as senior engineers in this industry, we make more than enough money to where we don't have to charge for our time. Only reason most of us charge for our time or acquire people to put in investment, because we've helped so many people throughout the years who wasted our time and resources. Like we've left birthday parties, had to step out on birthday parties or step out on dates or step out on this just to get on the call with you or just to help you out through this late at night. And for persons not to take our advice, like not to do these things, we had to learn that, okay, we need to start putting a coin as a wall between to keep, to just protect what we, our personal life. And so versus filter out those who really want the help. And you find out throughout the years, if you've done so much consulting, that people who really want the help will invest in your time and it's not up for question. You know, it's just a, where can I make that investment? And they're usually the ones that will go through and do all the things that you tell them to do to a T and even overdo things, you know, versus those who oftentimes, you know, just want to waste your time. And then we also give away a lot of free content. We also provide a lot of resources for free that we pay for, for people to learn and earn and get these opportunities as well. Yep. But, you know,
giveaways. I said giveaways.
Yeah, giveaways. I don't pay for certifications. You know, it costs money just to use the software we interview and all. You know, so, you know, and this is free for you to watch the video or wherever you. So it's like, we do so much giving that it's like, we don't, the money ain't it for us. You're not paying us that much to where it can compensate for us, you know, making up for what we don't earn in our careers, because we earned the money already. So what we're doing, did it as a filtration to really help those who need and want the help. And then for those who really need and want the help, but maybe can't afford that coin or what have you, they'll find their way to get to us. Like I had a guy who told me that. He said, look, I can't afford your consultation, but look, I know that you're going to be in this city, this city during this time. Let me take you out for lunch. Let me have a lunch for you. Let me buy lunch for you, whatever. And he had been from the hood. I'm from the hood. So that resonated with me. I said, yeah, brother, you know what? You don't even got to pay for it. Just had his call when we had the call. So like I do things like that all the time. Discounts all the time. It's not a money thing. It's more so just to create a filtration so we can get a free filtration system and so that we can have a piece of our lives back, you know, because.
Yeah, that's facts, bro. I tell people all the time, if it was a money thing, they'll know.
You hear me?
They don't know, because I'd be in front of a Rolls Royce or something. And you hear me? You can get like me in cybersecurity, pay for this and that. That's all you got to do if that's really a money play. You can tell who doing the money play and who actually, yeah, they're charging for a service. Some people have built like actual businesses off of this. So they got staff that they got to pay.
Yep.
But they still are trying to help you.
Yep.
They're trying to cut through the red tape that it took people like me and you years ago. It wasn't no people really helping us play by play to get in. You had to get out the mud.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. We trial and error babies.
Man, for real. So I was going to ask you real quick, what would be, for a person starting out in the cloud, what would be like the top five skills that they would need to know?
Top five skills is you need to have some. Number one, you need to learn Linux programming skills. No, that doesn't mean go out and get a Red Hat certification. Just do enough programming skills to be able to build something with a project. You can find projects on Medium, on LinkedIn, on YouTube, all type of free university websites to find and build a project. There's no wrong project that you're building when you're starting from scratch. So do a Linux project, get some Linux, understand how to do basic commands, and create something using Linux. You download a VirtualBox on your machine for free, create a virtual environment. That's a Linux OS, etc. So Linux skills, also networking skills. You need to be able to identify the difference between LANs, WANs, and then more so cloud, VPC, security groups, NACLs, etc. Networking. If you could or want to, just to get some paperwork under your belt because you did your Linux training already, you got some proficient Linux skills, you know how to, open up a command line and run it through, do a system status check, etc. But you want to get some paperwork under you, get the CCNA. That's a great certification to have. It's carried weight for over 20 years. It's going to carry weight still going forward for you at least to get a decent networking tech role. In the meanwhile, while you're building your tech career to try to get some experience under your belt. So that's for those who won't go paperwork crazy. But still, either whether you get the paperwork or not, get the skill, networking. Next would be infrastructure as code. Learn some Terraform. Build a very basic IaC environment, no matter the cloud provider, no matter if it's Google Cloud, AWS, Azure, Oracle Cloud, whomever. Build an IaC environment. Just get familiar with using Terraform modules, CloudFormation templates, JSON, syntax, being able to debug it. Running in debugging is natural. So that's Terraform. Fourth would be debugging. Debug. Run as many problems as you can with those first three things and get in the habit of being able to research. Even today's time, you can now use AI to help you decipher with those error codes or reading or what it's telling you. Get used to reading forums and what other people are saying online to research solutions to the bugs you're running into, because debugging is going to be most of your tech career. You're getting paid to debug just at a high level, all right? Or to know when things fail, like especially that CrowdStrike should teach you how important it is to have debugging skills, because when production systems go down for something like that, you are going to be expected to be on the call. And you are going to be expected to contribute towards the solution. All right, so debugging. And then the fifth thing I would mention now is to start off mastering one cloud provider. There's no such thing as a wrong cloud provider, all right? And there's each one has its pros and cons as far as with their niche, with the niche business types they attract. So you can research that. I talked about that on my LinkedIn. It's on my YouTube as well, but just find a cloud provider and get really good with that cloud provider enough to where you can build out an entire infrastructure on your own, all right? There's no such thing as a wrong one. This is all before you start to develop multi-cloud skills. So get good with one, get a certification with one. If you're going into sales, a practitioner or a foundational certification is fine. But if you're trying to get into an engineer role, you need to start look at those specialty certs or associate level certs level and above only. Don't go for a foundational practitioner cert if you want to become an engineer, a cloud engineer of any type, all right? Because these are five things to make you highly competitive in getting your first cloud role. And just keep in mind, nobody asking you as a junior or entry level cloud professional coming into the role to build out anything on your own. And most organizations aren't going to do that, lay that kind of responsibility out on you, unless you're going in as a cloud architect somewhere. But aside from that, you're going to be, the organizations already have systems set up. You're just going to support what they have going on, build what they have going on even further. So take the pressure off yourself to think that you're supposed to come in as a SME, but you want to overtrain so that you're over-prepared for when you get into your role. Because when you get into your role, you're going to be like, that's it.
That's all they asked me to do.
What?
I had to figure all this with that. Oh, I'm like, yeah, this could be.
Yeah, but, you know, but again, to be prepared for those and gain access to those opportunities, you need to overtrain so that when you get in those roles and those opportunities, you smash it. You smash it and you climb expeditiously to your next role. So those are five.
Appreciate that, T.I. Hey, had to get you to say that expeditiously. Partner. But where can our listeners, where can they find you at online?
Well, yes, you can find me on YouTube, B Cloud Engineers. That's B as like a B, the B solo, not B E, but B Cloud Engineers. You can go to our website, bcloudengineers.com, for all the services we offer. And then, you know, I'm on YouTube weekly. I'm uploading content weekly. We do our Tech at Nights where we drink some and I smoke a little something cigar wise. And I do a talk about a subject, a cloud tech subject, career subject for that week, as well as do a Q&A afterwards. Where I answer as many questions that come in through the chat. Shout out to my Breakthrough Bears on the channel. So, and then you can also find me on LinkedIn, Demikos Chambers, and you can find me on Instagram, and I post on Instagram and my story daily, and TikTok. And under Instagram and TikTok, you can find me as Cloud Tech Big Up.
Bet. Yeah. Listen, y'all, from talking to him, we are going to do a live. I don't know when we're going to do a live on the channel.
Yes,
so y'all be ready to come with y'all questions. I'll make sure I market it. People love when I bring y'all on to do the lives and they get their questions off. Good way to market for business as well.
Well, yeah, I gotta have you on, man. My audience will love you, man. So,
hey, you know I'm down.
You gotta sip some too, though. It can't just be vitamin water.
This is some lemonade. It's all I had in the fridge. But normally, I'm an old fashioned type of guy, or like, you know, some brown. Like, I try to stay like something to keep me cool.
Not got doing you. Too yeah, much. You're a responsible father. I get it. I ain't reached that level yet. I ain't at that zenith of adulthood yet. But you know,
it's either that or tequila. I'm like probably the two, or like I think my favorite like dark liquor to drink is Martell.
Okay, Martell's so good. Like, Martell's a classic. Like, yo, what you like, that Terramana, that tequila?
Nah, what do I like? You I can't remember what I used to. I used to drink DeLeon a lot. DeLeon. I used to like Casa Noble was.
Yeah, love me some DeLeon.
It's overrated.
Yeah,
Patron overrated for sure. But you know,
for sure. Patron is
it's the hood version. Patron to the hood is like what Hennessy is to
absolutely.
The hood.
Absolutely. I'm on Patron. I'm on.
That's it, man. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. But hey, guys, it's been another episode of Textual Talk. Y'all know where to find us. And until next time, we out. Peace.